Every morning we make a bracha of Birchas HaTorah, which concludes Baruch Atah Hashem, Noisein HaTorah, the giver of Torah. And we know Shavuos took place over 3,000 years ago when HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the Torah. We always Matan Torah, Matzman, Matan Torah Seinu. That was the time of the giving of Torah. And yet every day, instead of saying Baruch Atah Hashem, Nosan HaTorah, who gave us the Torah, we say Noisein HaTorah, the giver of Torah. And the Maral explains that the reason for this is because indeed HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave the Torah many years ago. But there has to be a connection. There has to be a partnership. Hashem gave the Torah, but did we receive the Torah? And as a matter of fact, Hashem can't be called the Noisein HaTorah. He can't be considered the giver of Torah unless there's someone on the receiving end. Unless there's someone there to receive the Torah. And indeed, when we receive the Torah, every Jew in every generation, and every year and every day, when we wake up and we say, we are ready to accept the Torah, we're ready to be mekabel, to receive this Torah Hashem, this gift that you gave us, we then activate the Nesinas HaTorah. We then turn HaKadosh Baruch Hu into the Nesein HaTorah. And this relationship goes on every day, day in, day out. Every time we say that bracha and every time we open up a sefer to learn, Hashem says, I give you the Torah. And Hashem indeed gave us the Torah on Shavuos. Very interesting Gemara in Menachos. Gemara says when Moshe Rabbeinu went up to heaven to receive the Torah, Hashem was putting the finishing touches on the Torah. He was putting tagin. He was putting little crowns, pointers on top of the letters. Moshe Rabbeinu said, Hashem, the Torah is complete. I finished writing the whole Torah. You dictated it and I wrote every single word. Nothing is missing. Why can't we just give the Torah now? Hashem says, I'm finishing it off. For who? For what? What are you finishing off? What are these crowns on top? Gemara says, Hashem told Moshe Rabbeinu because in many generations to come, there's going to be an individual. Akiva ben Yosef Shemai. It's going to be a Rabbi Akiva. Akiva ben Yosef. And he's going to be able to expound on those added crowns, those additions which I'm making now. And there's a thought based on the Maral. And indeed this means at the end of time, in generations very far away from the giving of Torah and Har Sinai, there are going to be individuals. Not a whole Klal Yisrael. Not Moshe Rabbeinu who encompasses all the Jewish people. But Yehudi Echad, me one Jew, learning with a Chavrusa with somebody else. And they're going to be able to learn the same Torah, but uncover new ideas. And that's the beauty and that's the greatness of Torah. Hashem is the Nesein HaTorah. Hashem is the one who gives it. And it's for us to receive it. And when we receive it, when we learn it, we give it back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. There are so many things hidden which Hashem says, I can't give this to you, you have to give it back to me. I must conclude with this story that just took place last week. I'm learning last week one night in the Kollel with someone who comes religiously, a chavrusa of mine. We'll call him Sammy. That's his name. And Sam and I are sitting across from one another and we're learning. I told him something what Gemara says. We're learning a little further. I told him something the Mishnah says. And he says, hey, one second. That doesn't seem to match up. What we said a few minutes ago, and what you said now, that doesn't seem to match up. And it was a brilliant question. And in the last week, I've asked this question to dozens of people. I've sent it out on many emails to dozens of people. I have not yet had a satisfactory answer. But that's what Torah is all about. Torah is all about us individuals We're all the Akiva ben Yosef who could be Moisif, who could add to the Torah. And when we learn it, we have a new understanding. We're giving it back to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. That's the relationship. Hashem is always the Nosein. Hashem is always the giver of Torah. But it's for us to be able to give it back. And that sense, that feeling, is so exhilarating. To be able to delve into it. To be able to uncover something new. Is a feeling that's unmatched. And that's what the Kehil Yungalai, that's what the rabbis of the Kehil do day in, day out. Learning diligently, reviewing, understanding. And while those of us are privileged to be in the Beis Medrash, there are those working diligently, day in, day out, our support staff in the office, our administrator, Ms. Liba Baum, my director, Mr. Richie Fine, and of course directed by my good chava, my right-hand man, Rabbi Yael David Zeffrin. And a yashukach to them for all of the programs throughout. And of course, particularly for the many logistics that went into preparing this event. You have on your chairs the list, of course, of the sponsors, and we thank them once again. You have our Shavuot schedule, you have our daily schedule, daily, morning, evening, the schedule of Torah. The Kollel also, we're ready to be nice in our Torah. We give every day. And anyone who wants, and there are so many here who do, could come in and be mekabel that Torah. It's a relationship. Now those who are ready to give, but it only is complete when those who are ready to receive. And that's where the schus we have, that privilege we have, and only we can do that. Hashem Kaviyochu can't even do that. He can't give back the Torah which He gave to us. Only we can give it back to Him. And that's the privilege that so many of you have with becoming part of the Kollel family. And tonight's lecture, to be given momentarily by Rav Aaron Kahn Shlita, very appropriately talking about the theme of Torah, what it means to learn Torah. Rabbi Kahn's shul is centered. The focus is Limud HaTorah. There's a daily kollel learning over there, about 50 laymen, 50 balabatim who come regularly to learn the program, which has spawned other programs of its type in other shuls in Brooklyn. At night, there's always people learning. Rabbi Kahn gives shiurim throughout the week, aside from his position in his Yeshiva University, to his Talmidim, many Shirim to his Balabatim, and therefore gives us a great privilege. We thank Rabbi Kahn for making the trip out here to Philadelphia to inspire us and teach us about this this important theme, which there's always more to learn about, always more to uncover. And every day when we have the privilege of being mekabel this Torah, to understand it even in a greater sense. Rav Aaron Kahn.
I thank the Baruch Kahu for his wonderful words. I noticed that there are many women here. And it underscores the critical role that women have had in what at first blush would seem to be a man's involvement, learning Torah. When the Ribbono Shel Olam, when Hashem gave the Torah to the Jews for the first time, and He gathered all of them together, He began by offering the Torah to the women first, as you might know. knowing that if they would accept the Torah, that would be a guarantor for the men as well. Rosh Kollel mentioned Rabbi Akiva a moment ago. Everyone knows that Rabbi Akiva was a shepherd. There is a very famous Gemara at the end of the tractate Makos. Many people who make a siyum on that Gemara quote this. And so you may be familiar with it. The Gemara teaches us that they came upon the Temple Mount, Rabbi Akiva and his colleagues, the greatest rabbis of their time. This was after the destruction of the Temple. The Romans had plowed under Yerushalayim. There was nothing but desolation. When they came in the environs of the Temple Mount, they rent their garments in mourning. And when they came upon the place that was once the Holy of Holies, they saw a fox coming out of that utter desolation. Wild animals are afraid of civilization. But the place was so desolate, so empty, so barren, so bereft of life and people, that the fox made his lair there, he made his home there. And they saw the fox, and they started to cry, except for Rabbi Akiva, who laughed. And Rabbi Akiva, why are you laughing? And he asked them, why are you crying? And they said, shall we not cry when we see that place which was the glory of Klal Yisrael, which was the place where the Kohen Gadol, the high priest, entered once a year on the holy day of Yom Kippur, and now it is so desolate that even the fox roams freely, and shall we not cry? And Rabbi Akiva said, that is precisely why I laugh. Because if the prophecy of desolation, Shu'alim Hilchavo, that the fox will roam, became so absolutely and perfectly fulfilled, so will the prophecy of Od Yeshvu Zakenim Uzakenos. Old men and old women will sit in the environs of Yerushalayim in peace and tranquility. And I had a question that troubled me very, very often and very deeply. Is there then not a moment to laugh and a moment to cry? Does not Kohelis say there is a time to laugh and a time to cry? Did they not rend their garments, all of them, Rabbi Akiva as well, in mourning? Was there any lack of faith in his fellow rabbis? Was he challenging them that they don't believe that there will be indeed a time of Mashiach? That there will be indeed a time when the old men and the old women will sit in peace and tranquility? Everybody believed the same. Everybody had the same faith. Everybody was confident about the future. Everybody knew that the future was ours, and that what Hashem promised would be fulfilled. So how is it then that Rabbi Akiva laughed and yet they cried? And I think the answer is simple. For Rabbi Akiva, tomorrow was today. Rabbi Akiva saw the future as a reality. It was palpable, it was tangible. He could touch the future. They believed in the future, but they couldn't touch it. What they saw in front of their eyes was a fox. What Rabbi Akiva saw, you might say, was like a hologram. Now you see a fox, and suddenly you look again and you see the high priest. You see the Kohen Gadol. And I was thinking to myself, do you know why Rabbi Akiva was able to do that? Because there was a woman by the name of Rachel, the wife of Rabbi Akiva, who found a shepherd boy who was ignorant, who didn't even know the Aleph Beis, who said that when I was a shepherd, if I saw a scholar of Torah, I would want to tear him to shreds. And she said, that's the person that I'm going to marry. And her father said, "Are you crazy? Have you lost your mind? Kalba Savua, the richest man in Yerushalayim, the greatest supporter of Torah. Person who had every possible candidate. You know, it's not so easy to do a shidduch. But he had every candidate possible. All of the Talmidei Chachamim of Yerushalayim, all those young and wonderful righteous scholars. And here his daughter, the apple of his eye, she lost her mind. And they eloped. You know what it means to elope? From a frum home? You know why? We really don't understand it, but there was something that she saw that made her see the Rabbi Akiva of tomorrow as if it was the reality of today. She also saw a hologram. She looked at that shepherd, that ignorant man, and she saw the Rabbi Akiva who would be the teacher for all time. The role of the woman in Torah is so essential. Hashem gave it first to the distaff side, to the women. And in every generation, it was the woman who says, "I want you to be a Talmud Chacham. I want my children to grow up to be real, genuine, competent Torah scholars. I want to support Torah. I want to give my life for Torah. I'm willing to wait for my husband for 24 years. And so it's a very big zechus to be able to address both sides of the aisle, to speak about my beloved, the Torah. It's a little embarrassing to talk about one's beloved in public, but about Torah I think we can manage. I have a question for you. My question is, who's responsible for the Torah? Whose Torah is it? Now, what kind of a question is that? Is it the scholar? Or is it the populace? Is it the person that sits in the kollel day and night? Is it the great giant of Torah? Or is it every single Jew, man, woman, and child? And the answer is, of course, both. Their roles, however, are somewhat different. And it is precisely that I wish to convey to you tonight. I have to warn you that there is no clock facing me now, nor in my shiur room, nor in my shul. And everybody knows that I am the only Rav that speaks for at least 45 minutes on a Shabbos morning in all of Brooklyn, and maybe the rest of the world besides. But I wanted to share this with you, and I hope that I will be able to convey the message in more or less the time that is allotted. The Sfas Emes, one of the great Torah scholars, who was also the Hasidic Rebbe of Ger, of the Gerer dynasty, asked the question, Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai, the beginning of the Pirkei Avos. Moshe receives the Torah at Sinai and gives it over to whom? To Yehoshua, his disciple. Yehoshua gives it over to the elders, and ultimately it goes to the Anshei Knesset HaGdola, the people of the great assembly, and eventually it arrives at our doorstep. Now the question, of course, is, what do you mean that Moshe gave the Torah to Yehoshua? He gave the Torah to every single Jew. In fact, the Talmud itself describes how Moshe Rabbeinu taught everyone. First his brother Aaron entered, and then Aaron's children entered, and he kept repeating the Torah. And that's where you learn that Torah has to be learned at least four times before you even get off the ground. So the question, of course, that the Sfas Emes asks is something that everybody has to ask. right at the beginning. How is it possible to say that Moshe gave the Torah to Yoshua? So he says that the Torah has two aspects to it, and that is the secret, that is the answer to this question. There is a responsibility for every Jew to learn Torah. Moshe Rabbeinu gathered everyone together, and he was their Rebbe. And then Aaron took over, and he was their Rebbe, and so on. But there is also something about preserving the treasure for the next generation, for being the watchman, the guardian, the shomer. And that is given over to a specific individual or a specific group of individuals. And their responsibility is unique. They are not just obligated to study the Torah, they're obligated to preserve the Torah for the next generation. They are the keepers of the key. They are the preservers of the treasure. They have to guarantee that what was received from above is transmitted down below without any change, without any blemish, without any loss. We have in the Torah a verse. It was in my title, Morasha Kehilas Yaakov. Torah Tziva Lanu Moshe. Moshe commanded us a Torah which is the Morasha. We'll translate that word in a moment. It's not an easy word to translate. Morasha of the congregations of Jacob. It means it is the Morasha of every Jew. And what is Morasha? Morasha is an inheritance. But not really. You know what the difference? You know, in Hebrew, the word for inheritance is Yerusha. What is the difference between Yerusha and Morasha? The answer is very simple. In inheritance, you want to squander it? Be my guest. Whatever I received, if someone passes away, and he left houses, and stocks, and bonds, and a ton of cash in a vault, jewels, whatever it was, and the children inherit it, it belongs to them to eat up, to consume, to destroy, to throw away. They can do anything they want with it. It belongs to them and to them only, and they have absolutely no responsibility to anyone else. That is Yerusha. And the Torah is not a Yerusha. And the Talmud says that the Torah cannot be a Yerusha. It's not an inheritance. It is a Morasha. Morasha is something that you are given in the next generation to give over to the following generation. Intact, preserved, not squandered, not modified, not made consistent with your attitudes or values or the times that you live in, but rather you make yourself. You know, they tell the story about a child that was trying to kiss the Torah. And the fellow was holding the Torah, bringing the Torah back to the Aron, lowered himself so the child could kiss the Torah. And the Rav said, no, lift up the child to the Torah. You never lower the Torah to the child. The Torah is infinite, the Torah is forever. We have to adapt ourselves to the Torah message. But that is part of the responsibility of every generation. That is part of the responsibility that you give over the Torah to the next generation intact, and you cannot squander it, you can't eat it up, you can't gamble it away. And that is why the Torah is called Morasha. But it is Morasha Kehilas Yaakov. Every single Jew has that responsibility to immerse himself in the Torah, to learn the Torah, to support the Torah, to preserve the Torah. But it is the responsibility of the Moshe to Yehoshua, to the Zakenim, to the Anshei Knesset Hagdola, to guarantee the Torah. And that's the difference. To learn the Torah, to guarantee the Torah. It is Merasha Kehilas Yaakov. It belongs to everyone. And I must tell you, there's this incredible Medrash. The Medrash talks about someone by the name of Rabbi Yanai. And Rabbi Yanai, I'm not going to read it, it's in heavy duty Aramaic. But I'm going to paraphrase it for you. Rabbi Yanai looked upon somebody and he made a very nice impression on him. So he invited him to his home for a meal, thinking that he's going to have a very wonderful conversation of Torah on the highest level with this man. And he was so incredibly shocked, because to his dismay, this man was totally ignorant. In fact, he said to him, "You know anything in the Mishnah?" He says, "No." "You know anything in the Agadic portions, the stories of the Talmud?" "No." "You know any psukim? Do you know the Torah? Breishis, Shmos, Vayikra, Bamidbar, Deuteronomy?" He says, "No." So he was very distressed that he had brought such a person into his house. He says, "You know what? Why don't you lead the benching at least?" And he says, "No, I'd rather that you, Yanai, should lead the benching." He was embarrassed because he didn't know how to lead the benching either. So Yanai said to him, "I'll tell you what, repeat after me. Repetrea plemois, you know, repeat it after me." So he says to him, "This is what you should say. The dog ate the bread of Yanai." It's very harsh. Very, very harsh. I'm not going to go into Yanai's perspective. It's not relevant right now. Rabbi Yanai was a big tzaddik. But he said these words, and this fellow got up, and he got very angry, but not at the title. Not because he called him a dog. He got up and he got very angry. He says, "You stole my heritage. Yerusasi gaboch da'at moinei ali. You prevented me from acquiring my inheritance." And Rabbi Yanai says, "I don't know what you're talking about. I don't even know you. I made the mistake of inviting you thinking you were a great scholar. I've never seen you before in my life. How could I have stolen your inheritance?" He says, "I once passed by a yeshiva, a cheder, with little kids. And he heard, the windows were open, and he heard the sound of the children saying over their verses. And he heard the verse, Torah tziva lanu Moshe, Morosha kehilas Yaakov. His inheritance of the entire people of Israel. And to the best of my recollection, it did not say the inheritance of Rabbi Yanai." And then Rabbi Yanai asked him, "Tell me something. How is it that you deserve to eat at my table?" It's a very interesting thing, this whole idea of Rabbi Yanai and his table and why he needed that he should be a Torah scholar. It's not for now. It turns out that he was a tremendous person. He did unbelievable acts of kindness. He made shalom bayis between husband and wife. He cheered people up. He gave a lot of tzedakah. What is the point of this midrash? After all, this midrash was written by rabbis, by scholars, not by this fellow. So what is the point? The point is that every single rabbi who studies Torah day and night has to know that the Torah belongs to every single Jew. Ignorant or not, it is his portion. And it is also the responsibility of everyone who knows to teach the person who doesn't know. It's the responsibility of everyone who has to provide for those who do not have. And to care enough that it should be the Morosha of Kehilas Yaakov, of the entire congregation of Israel, that you can never say, "I'm happy, I'm learning, I'm satisfied." And if that is not one of the cardinal features of this particular kollel, what is? That it's never enough that I know. It's never enough that I study. It's never enough that I was initiated in the incredible secrets of the Torah. It's not enough that I have my chavrusa who's also a scholar. I want a chavrusa that finds in me the way of achieving the morosha kehilas Yaakov, of getting back my own inheritance. I wanted to share with you something that was alluded to by the Rosh Kolo. The Shaloh HaKadosh, the author of the Shnei Luchos HaBris, Shaloh, he asks a question. The Torah describes the sound that emanated, the voice that emanated from Har Sinai, as a kol gadol velo yasaf, a great sound, velo yasaf, that is the Hebrew. Lo is a negative, it doesn't what? Well, the strange thing about the word yasaf, which is also like the name Yosef, is that it has two opposite meanings. On the one hand, it means it doesn't stop, and on the other hand, it means it doesn't continue. So the Shaloh asks, well, which is it? The voice, the sound did not stop, or the sound did not continue? It stopped right there. And he says they're both true. Because the Torah at Sinai was given at that moment. And Hashem does not reveal Himself again and again to give the Torah. There is no new Torah. There is no other Torah. And everything that the rabbis learned and studied, all is encompassed in that Torah which was given to Moshe Rabbeinu. In that sense, kol gadol, but it doesn't continue. It ends at Har Sinai. But on the other hand, every single time, a scholar or a layman, and the experience that the Rosh Kolel had, I've had 100 times, maybe 1,000 times, where someone has come over to me and he's confounded me. And I'm not sure that I'll be able to answer that question. Because every Jew has his chelek in Torah. And every Jew, when he wants to, shares that Torah, belongs to him, and he has the ability to think the most profound of thoughts. After all, every single person's neshama originally, before they were born, was given that Torah. And the fact of the matter is that every person has the ability to have insights is a miraculous thing. The Brisker Rav once said, imagine for a moment, we're not that far from Princeton, right? Not that far. There's the Institute for Advanced Studies. They have these brilliant people that sit around the whole day and do nothing. Except the thinking thoughts. That's what they do. They think thoughts the whole day. And they get paid very handsomely for it. And they come up with these incredible ideas, and they write them on blackboards and in journals and in books. One of the people in my shul, who passed away not so long ago, his name was Dr. Ehrenpreis. He taught at Temple, actually, in a very advanced course in mathematics. Dr. Ehrenpreis wrote books, and I happen to have a background in math and physics. So I decided one day to take a look at one of his books. And to be honest with you, I wasn't sure if I was holding it right side up or upside down. Just not my level. Imagine the Torah that Moshe Feinstein, Zichrono Livracha, these incredible giants, the Vilna Gaon. Imagine someone would tell you that you have access to that very same Torah. Imagine that somebody knows nothing about quantum mechanics, and he comes in to this Institute of Advanced Studies, and he looks at that blackboard. He doesn't have the slightest idea of what's going on. So he goes over to one of those great professors, one of those geniuses, and he says, explain this to me. And the genius says to him, well, what kind of background do you have? How far have you gone? How much physics do you know? How much advanced mathematics do you have at your disposal? And he says, well, I know that 1 + 1 = 2. You know, I know that there's such a thing called gravity, and Newton discovered it. So he says, Well, come back in about 10 centuries. And maybe we'll have what to talk about. And here you have the Gadol HaDor. You have this little child. Mordechai, when he was in distress, when Haman succeeded in having this terrible edict of Achashverosh promulgated, what does he do? He goes back into the Beis Medrash. He goes over to the little child and he asks him, what are you learning? In every generation, the giants of Torah would come over to somebody and engage them in a conversation about Torah. And who were they? Little children. How much could they have known already? How many years, how many centuries perhaps would they have to study to reach that level? If ever at all. And nevertheless, the Torah somehow allows itself that kind of malleability, that kind of incredible flexibility, that it belongs to every single Jew literally. That the greatest giant of quantum mechanics can learn, can study with this little fellow who's 1 + 1 = 2. And it doesn't even make any sense, to be honest with you. But it's true. And it's real. And it's so fundamental to the essence of what it is that Torah is all about, because Torah is the living word of Hashem. And that's how we connect to Hashem. And if that's the case, then every single Jew has to have the right and the ability to access it. It can never become the patrimony of the individual giant, even though he may have the responsibility for the Masorah, Moshe Kibo Torah Misina and Masorah Yoshua, but the Morasha belongs to Kehilas Yaakov. And I want to share something with you, one of my most favorite parables. It's brought down in the Sefer of the Chofetz Chaim by the name of Shem Olam. And it is a parable uttered by none other than the Vilna Gaon himself. There's a verse in Tehillim. Sos anochi al imrosecha kemotzei shalol rov. I delight in your words as someone who has found a massive amount of spoils of war. And the Vilna Gaon asked the question, what exactly does that mean? Why is the learning and the discovery of Torah compared to spoils of war? And why is the word motzei, like somebody chanced upon it? I work very hard, I struggle, I spend the whole day in kolo. I'm not chancing upon it. So he wants to know, what is this verse trying to say? Because obviously there's more than meets the eye. And he gave a parable. He told a story. The Vilna Gaon. He told a story. He said that there was a king who was desperate because he was losing one battle after another and his empire was in danger of collapsing. It was one general who was in retirement. And I'm sort of embellishing the story a little bit. But there was one general who was in retirement, and that general was certainly not interested in one side or the other. He would manage. And he was very happy sitting under his tree and doing whatever he was doing. There is one thing, however, that he had a big appetite for. There are people like that on occasion. He liked money. So the king decided, what good is all my wealth if I lose everything in the next war? So he came, hat in hand, as they say, to the general. He said, listen, I have a proposition for you. I want you to gather my army together, and in your brilliance and your strategy, you'll be able to figure out how to do this. But if you win the next battle and conquer the enemy and get rid of them, then I promise you that the first day, from morning till night, you will be able to take all of your bags and suitcases and whatever you have, any container that you can find, and go into the field of battle and take all the spoils that you can get your hands on. And even I, the king, won't go first. And you can take whatever you want. You'll be the wealthiest person, because they pillaged and plundered, and in their camp they had unbelievable riches. Well, he got very excited about this. He engaged the enemy, he won the battle, he won the war, and the king kept his promise. He goes with all of his bags and containers and whatever he could muster. And he's full of excitement and enthusiasm, and he's so alive with the potential and the promise of becoming such an incredibly wealthy person, a mogul. And then the day begins to go by, and he's collecting rubies and emeralds and diamonds and all kinds of rich things, gold and silver, whatever he can get his hands on. It just goes on and on, and all of a sudden he sees that the sun is in the west, and all of a sudden he sees that the sun is about to set, and he looks around him and he realizes something, that the day is essentially over, and there's much more than he collected left on the battlefield. And suddenly he begins to feel a tinge of despair. A certain sense of sadness envelops him. The Vilna Gaon says here that the word sason is one of the different terms that are used for joy. But it's a specific term, and it means a joy which has in the end a small measure of sadness. And the Vilna Gaon said that no matter how much a person learns, and no matter how capable he is, and no matter how brilliant his mind, and no matter how competent, and with all of the diligence of the Vilna Gaon himself, that he added up all of the time that he wasted in an entire year, it came out to 2 hours or something like that. And that person will never, ever even just barely touch the Torah of Hashem, because it is infinite. And the sense that one has towards the end, that as much as I've accomplished, there's so much left that is untouched, fills the person with a measure of sadness that he has to leave the world. And that we ask a very simple question. What good is a joy that ends with a measure of sadness? Well, the answer is, number one, the general might be upset, but he's also the wealthiest person in the kingdom. But that's not the real answer. The real answer is that Hashem had a choice. Hashem could have said, you are human, you are finite, you are flesh and blood, today you are here, tomorrow you are not. I am going to give you something that matches you and your capacity, your humanity, your being, flesh and blood. I am giving you something that's finite. And then everybody would be excited with it. Hashem said, I'm going to do something different. And that's what the angels were so upset about when Moshe Rabbeinu came to heaven. How can you give the Torah that is infinite to finite beings? They'll never encompass it. They'll never master it. They'll never know the ultimates. They'll never be able to perceive the deep and esoteric levels that are embedded in the Torah, in those crowns that we were talking about before. So how is it possible to give this Torah to them? That's what the angel said. And Hashem says, no, I love my people. I took them out of Egypt to give them this Torah. And I want them to have the infinite. Because if you are finite, the greatest gift that Hashem could possibly give is something that allows us to touch the infinite. Even though we will never be able to encompass the infinite, precisely because it is infinite. But Hashem says, wouldn't you choose to touch the infinite? And by the way, I want to tell you something interesting, which is a digression, but it's important. In a bris milah, we use the same word sos, sason. Under the chuppah, misos chosan al kala, we use the same word sason. You know why? Because a chosin and a kal under the chuppah, they promise one another the world. We're going to be perfect, we're going to love each other with absolute fidelity for the rest of our lives. We'll never have a fight, we'll never have a quarrel. We will be one and not two. And we will never cease to have that abiding and uncompromising love for one another. And life has its way. And the sason is an opportunity for Chosn Kala to become husband and wife and touch the infinite. But in the attempt to touch the infinite, they discover their finiteness. And there's always some measure of tension, some clash, some occasional word that was misplaced. And that sasam doesn't ultimately lead to the perfection, because a human being can't be perfect. And the same thing with bris milah. The child is challenged and charged with a vision of such complete wholeness, of such complete purity, of such complete kedusha, of sanctity. We want him to be the perfect servant of Hashem. But not everybody is able to live up to that in that fullest measure, because we are finite. And this joy always has a tinge of sadness. But would it be better that we didn't aim for the stars? Would it be better that we didn't try to achieve perfection in marriage, in the raising of our children? And I'd like to close with the following idea. Do we still have a few minutes? I'd like to close with the following idea. You know, we have an unbelievable medrash. It's such a beautiful medrash. I have many students. Every year, a variety of students, I don't know who determines who comes into my class and who does not. It's one of those mysterious things that the office does, which in every bureaucracy leads one to wonder many times about what exactly is the formula, you know. But whatever it is, the range of students and their capacity, and sometimes even their involvement, is vast. And I see many times, looking into the Beis Medrash, and for that matter in my shul, we have a huge number of people coming to learn. Balabatim, retirees mostly, or people who don't have jobs. I remember once there was a fellow that was crying. I asked him, "Why are you crying?" He says, "I just got a job." That's pretty amazing, to tell you the truth. But the fact of the matter is that the range there is unbelievable. Some of them are tremendous scholars, and some of them, they just don't get the point. They simply can't get the point. And we try and we try, and one wonders, what's he doing there? You know, in the Shulchan Aruch, there's a whole chapter. After the davening is over, you go from the shul to the Beis Medrash to learn Torah. And you're supposed to do that every single day with the consistency. And then it says, and even if you don't understand a thing, you should still go to the Beis Medrash and just sit there. And one wonders, what is this, some sort of osmosis or it's diffusion, whatever it's called. This is some sort of an absorption, you'll take it in from the air. And I think the answer, of course, is yes, to some extent. And maybe there's a belief that no matter who you are, the Torah belongs to you, and there's always something you can learn, but there's something else besides. So there's this incredible medrash, and it's a very important medrash for us to know, because none of us are the Vilna Gaon, and none of us are Rav Moshe Feinstein, and none of us are Rav Elyashiv Zichrono Livracha. We are just trying and struggling to learn Hashem's Torah. And sometimes it goes, and sometimes it goes well, and sometimes it doesn't go well at all. And we suddenly look at that Shas, and we say, who am I kidding? This is not for me. And I have to admit that when I was a youngster, I had this idea that I would master the whole Torah. And as you learn, you discover that that is not a simple thing to do. And eventually, you are almost agitated enough about the idea that you can't do it as well as you would have imagined, that there's a little whispering birdie inside your head that's making you crazy. Maybe your agenda is misguided. Maybe you're not supposed to know the whole Torah. Set your limits a little bit. Lower the bar. And then you'll be able to achieve it, and you'll be successful, and you'll be happy. And what about the person that just doesn't know anything? And he looks at that entire Shas, that array, you know, in the art scroll, it's even more volumes, because they repeat the same page over and over again. Now you look at that Shas and you say to yourself, that's not for me. You look at Chumash with the Ramban, even with Rashi sometimes. Let's skip this Rashi, it's too complicated. So I have to tell you, the Medrash reveals to us something very remarkable. That these kind of questions and these worries and these concerns were ancient in every generation, including the time of the greatest Torah scholars. And it says in the Medrash, in several places, that a person looks up at a tree and he sees there's a basket full of fruit on the top of the tree. And he says, oh, I don't have the ability to get those fruit. And he's about to go away. And the Medrash says that the fool thinks like that and actually leaves. And he will never have the joy and the satisfaction of eating those fruits. But what does the smart person think? The pikeach. He says, well, how did the basket get up there? Somebody must have put it there. Well, if somebody put it there, then I can take it down. And then the Medrash continues with another parable, with another example. He says, a person was asked to go to a huge mound of earth and to simply level it flat with the rest of the ground. And he starts taking one shovel full and another shovel full, and he doesn't seem to be making a dent. The fool says, it's hopeless. Throws the shovel down and he goes away. The smart person says, one shovel full today, another shovel full tomorrow, sooner or later, the ground is level. Says the Medrash. Fool says, there's this huge Torah. I'm looking at it. It's an entire library. It's hopeless. And he goes away. And he gives it up. And he remains an ignorant person for the rest of his life. But what does the smart person say? One page today, one page tomorrow, and sooner or later he becomes a Torah scholar. But then the Medrash continues. And this is the most unbelievable thing. And again, I rely on the Vilna Gaon. The Medrash says, a person was hired. And he's getting paid every single day to fill a barrel with water. There's only one problem. What's the problem, of course? The barrel has a hole on the bottom. And as long as he keeps filling it, so it drains out of the bottom. And it's useless. The fool says, what am I, crazy? I'm filling the barrel, filling the barrel, filling the barrel, and nothing. The smart person says, the Medrash, he says, what difference does it make? I'm getting rewarded for it. I'm getting paid. The Vilna Gaon takes this parable, which we would say means what? You try, and you learn, and for the effort you get rewarded by Hashem, so why not do it? It's an unbelievable amount of reward. For every word, for every effort. The Vilna Gaon takes it to a different level, a different dimension. He says, look at that barrel. It's the cleanest barrel in the world. That's such an incredible idea. The person comes in and he struggles with the Torah and he doesn't understand. And he learns and it goes out. He doesn't have the ability to retain. And he's learning and learning, and it doesn't seem to have any impact. But he is pure. He is holy. He's never been where he could have been during all those hours that he spent in the Beis Medrash. And he's never been tainted. He's never been tarnished. He's the cleanest barrel in the world. Every single Jew, even the person who in the end, it just comes out of the crack on the bottom. Doesn't have the ability, doesn't have the capacity, doesn't have the memory. Every single Jew has a portion in the Torah. And every single Jew has a portion in the same Torah of the Vilna Gaon and Reb Moshe Feinstein and all the other giants. And every single Jew has a responsibility to use whatever talents, abilities, and capacities that he has to delve into that Torah as deeply as he can. And that is because the Torah is Morasha Kehilas Yaakov. And there will always be those whose responsibility, as the Sfas Emes says, is Moshe Kibel Torah Misinai U'Misara LiYoshua. One cannot live without the other. You cannot preserve something and there are no takers. in the next generation. But you always have to have those giants as well. We respect them, we love them, we cherish them, we support them, we want their success, because in their success we have a Torah for the next generation that each and every one of us can do according to our capacity, and each and every one of us is able to lift the bar a little bit and say one page today, one page tomorrow. And Be'ezus Hashem, we know all of Shas, you should be rewarded with all good things for the tremendous amount that you do in the kollel and for the kollel. I have to tell you one thing. Any community that has Torah as its central idea is a community that survives and carries forth. Any community where they had kashrus, they even had a little bit of Shabbos, whatever, but they didn't have Torah as the central goal, as the central agenda, the communities vanished from the face of the earth. You look at all of these towns and villages, whether it was in Europe or in Spain or in the United States, in the South and Midwest and wherever you go, and you see tons and tons of assimilated Jews because they came and they didn't stress the critical learning of Torah on the highest level. They satisfied themselves with bar mitzvah lessons, and that was the demise of Yiddishkeit. It's only Torah that is that preservative which, for the entity called Klal Yisrael, Torah Tzivolano Moshe, Marusha Kehilas Yaakov. You want the Kehilas Yaakov? You're going to have the Torah Marusha Kehilas Yaakov. It's as simple as that. And you know this verse is at the beginning of the blessings that Moshe Rabbeinu gave to the rest of Bnei Israel. And you know what it says to me? It says you can give as many blessings as you want. But as long as you don't have that as your heading, as your first and foremost blessing, that the Torah should be Marusha Kehilas Yaakov, no blessing will save you. And when HaKadosh Baruch Hu sends Klal Yisrael into Golos, and it's a miserable Golos, with so many things to sway us and confound us, so many things to perturb us and to give us pause, it is only the Torah that has the answer. It's only the Torah that has the elixir. It's only the Torah that has the remedy. It's only the Torah that has the magic potion. And because it is only the Torah, wherever the Torah prevailed, none of the winds of Golos, of our miserable exile, could touch us. The moment that the Torah flag was set down, was lowered, then the smallest wind of assimilation was able to take its toll. So it's a very big pleasure that I was able to address you, and I hope that you share in my love affair with the Torah. It is the food that I eat and the air that I breathe. It is life itself. Be'ezus Hashem Yisbarach, maybe I'll have an opportunity to come back and we'll continue the conversation. Torah Tzivolano Moshe, Marusha Kehilas Yaakov.